Welcome to the Newland Rock Leadership Effectiveness Podcast, hosted by me, Kate Thomas. This podcast is packed with practical tips and expert views to unlock the leadership effectiveness in you and your organization. My name is Kate Thomas, and I'm a leadership effectiveness expert and the founder of Newland Rock, a consultancy dedicated to focusing on increasing leadership effectiveness for talent-savvy companies and individuals. In this podcast, I will share my experience of supercharging leadership performance and business results with you. Join me and the best thought leaders for topical discussions and talent-centric insights. Caroline, it's an absolute pleasure to have you join me for this Leadership Effectiveness podcast. And let me maybe say why. When I read your book, I was just turning every page, just going, yes, yes, oh my goodness, yes. And it was like reading something that was giving me every tip, trick and hack on how to be more effective. You know, not just from a leadership perspective, but actually in life as well. So it really talked to my science and analytical brain, but it also talked to this lifestyle brain or this lifestyle ambition just to live better and to lead better. So I'm absolutely thrilled that you've said yes to having a chat with me, and we can share a little bit more with the Newland Rock audience today. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really glad to hear that. That's kind of what I set out to do. So it's always nice to know that it kind of worked. So all good.
Absolutely did. And maybe just for an introduction and to help me understand, what even led you, you know, what's the background? What led you to writing this book?
Well, it's kind of a sort of a long journey that when you look back on it, sort of looks deliberate, but I'm not sure whether I knew I was coming to this point. But when I first went to university, I decided to do PE teaching with biology as a second subject. Now, I didn't choose that because I was into sport at school particularly. I think my PE teachers would have sort of rolled their eyes and gone, really, Caroline, are you sure? But because I was looking ahead at my career and I thought, whatever it is I do, I don't want to be sitting around all day. I don't want to be inside all day. I like science. So I know I'll do a mixture of biology and some PE teaching. So I'm in and out of the classroom and I'm active all the time. So that kind of made sense to me as a 17-year-old. Mm. And then after the first year of the PE teaching degree, it sort of became obvious to me that everyone I was doing it with was really, really into team sports. That they love nothing more than, you know, running around in a wet field and then going down the pub to watch a match. And I kind of thought, I'm not sure this is really for me after all. And I was really enjoying the biology side of the course. So I swapped over and did a biology degree, just a straight biology degree without teaching involved. And then I guess in my third year, I can pinpoint the moment I decided I wanted to write about science when I was sitting in the library writing an essay about learning in bees. And it was just fascinating how these tiny creatures with tiny pinprick brains can do all these amazing feats, like they can direct each other around mountains by giving the distance around the bottom, but the direction as if you were flying through the mountain. And it just blew my mind. And I thought, I wonder if there's a job where I can just research really interesting stuff and write it all down. And yeah, it turned out that there's such a thing as a science journalist. And I ended up sort of pursuing that. And then for many, many years, I kind of wrote a lot about sort of animal stuff, but also got really fascinated by the human mind and why we think the way we do and how to get the best out of our, you know, these amazing bits of kit we've got in our heads, but also how to get around the many glitches that seem to come as part of the system, like, you know, lack of focus and anxiety and stress and all these other things. And then after quite a while of, you know, thinking about the brain and psychology, it sort of occurred to me that my own mind, my own brain works best when my body is on the move. And I started to wonder if there's anything scientific that we can say about that that's beyond, oh, well, exercise makes you feel good. And it turned out there's actually loads of research out there. Most of it, you know, hasn't really been publicized that widely. And it's everything from cell biology up to physiology and sort of everything in between and neuroscience and everything. And it was just this massive seam that I just couldn't resist mining. So yeah, that's a very long way of saying this is how I got to where I am. But
and here we are.
Yeah.
It sounds like as if you were able to, you became your own guinea pig.
Yes, and that's what I did. So in my first book, which is called Override, I literally was a guinea pig. I went round various labs around the world and neuroscience labs, and I picked five different bits of my own brain, so different skills, so creativity, focus, anxiety, maths, time perception, things like that. And I went round to different labs and said, okay, what can you apply the best science you've got to try and improve my skills in these areas? So, and I was stuck into brain scanners and zapped in the head with magnetic pulses and all kinds of things, which was more fun than it sounds.
We're learning a bit about you're pretty brave in your plight for finding the answer.
Yeah, and the fun thing about the job that I get to do is that I basically get to dip in right at the top end of where the research is happening and ask the people in the know, well, tell me about it or show me it or try it on me. And and it's great because you don't have to spend years doing a PhD and, slogging away at the lab bench, but you get the really good stuff. So I love it. It makes life interesting.
And so that really good stuff is coming to us now in the book that I just read, the book that we're here to talk about, and that's MOVE. So the new science of body over mind. And for those who haven't read it yet, what's the key message? What do you really want to land with your readers?
I think the key message here is that we are not a brain on legs. It's not that the brain, it does the thinking and the body does the moving, that the way we move our bodies has impacts, really important impacts, on the way we think and feel. So it can change the way we think, it can change and help us manage our emotions, and a well-timed bit of movement and certain ways of moving, for very good scientific reasons, not hand-wavy spiritual explanations, but really good physiological reasons, these ways of moving can change the way we think and feel. We were born to move, and we can't get the best out of our brains and our minds by staying still, which is what we do most of the time.
Isn't it just? We can't get the best out of our brains if we stay still, but our modern day of working, and actually our modern day of living, means that we're sedentary more than we're moving. We are sitting there, even now, actually. I could be standing having this conversation. I'm even thinking to myself, why aren't I? Why haven't I stood up to talk?
Yeah, there were a lot of the writing period. I sat at my desk tapping away thinking, I am a total fraud. I'm sitting here for several hours at a time writing about how important it is to move. And it is difficult, in modern work, unless you're work, happen to be a post person or, you have a lot of movement involved in your work. Yeah, I think the modern workplace is built around sitting, and which I think is a bit of a mistake, really, because we know that we think differently, for example, when we are moving forward through space. So going for a walk has been shown to increase creativity and also change the way we perceive time. So these are really cool psychological experiments where people have been asked to move forward, and what the effect it has on our perception of time is that because we tend to think of the past as being behind our back and the future being ahead of us somewhere, physically moving through space makes the past feel further away and makes the future and hopeful thoughts feel closer, as if you're sort of figuratively getting somewhere as well as literally getting somewhere. So just things like that, I think if we take that on board, if you're trying to come up with ideas and strategies about the business or just for your life in general, it doesn't really matter. Sitting is not great. Going out for a walk, rebrand that as work, because it really is, and it can be a lot more effective than sitting and banging your head off the desk for a long time.
I think what I'm hearing then is that if we really want to raise our game, if we really want to come at, we can say post-pandemic world, just life in general and leadership, if we really want to come at it and elevate ourselves and enhance ourselves, we're saying we need more of an immersive way of working. We need to be in it rather than stationary in it. We need to be moving within our working world.
Yeah, and a lot of time that, you know, that does, that change has to come from the leadership. You know, it may be all well and good people reading my book, but thinking, well, that's great. But if I start wandering around and going out for long walks, people might start raising their eyebrows. But, you know, I do know sort of top managers that take their team out and say, right, let's go for a walk. And they have walking meetings and walking catch ups. Mm. You know, their one on ones are done on the move. And that just makes everybody feel good. It makes the employee feel valued, you know, and everyone can just feel that they can think more clearly and talk openly. And so, yeah, I think building it in at a cultural level is a really important thing to do, because then everyone feels a little bit freer to get up from their desks and think something else.
Absolutely. I recently wrote a short article on LinkedIn, and I talked about how companies like Facebook and Google have always had quite a vibrant work environment. And for most parts, we see that as being an attraction tool, you know, because you'll get certain generations in particular that really want that kind of buzz in their working day. But I think from what you're saying, and from also understanding a little bit more about these businesses, the opportunity has actually been about maximizing performance. Yes, they're attracting people because they are offering a culture that is more more versatile in terms of how you work. But by doing that, those working there in those environments are giving more to their jobs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not only because they feel valued and like somebody cares about their mental well-being, but also because, yeah, that makes people more productive. And when we know things like there is a hormone released from our bones that when we put our bodies under gravity and move, it's released from the bone. It's called osteocalcin, and this travels in the blood to the brain, and it has a role in memory, and not only memory, it seems to have a role in sort of reducing anxiety and stress as well. So just getting up, moving, putting some weight on your bones as much as possible, little and often throughout the day, it may well, yeah, improve focus, improve, you know, performance, and in the long term as well. We know that the link between cognitive decline over many years, it's linked to the amount of time a person spends sedentary throughout their life, regardless of the amount of time they spend doing intense exercise. So what we're trying to do, yeah, what we're trying to do is, it's actually quite terrifying as well, because the way our lives are set up, it's like, right, quick burst, lunchtime, get back and sit down and do the work again. But actually, you're better off doing sort of lower intensity, little and often, you know, carrying stuff. It doesn't have to be a workout involving weights. It could be body weight exercise. I've got in the habit of sort of doing squats, which is admittedly less embarrassing if you work at home by yourself. But, you know, if the cat comes into the room, I sort of do a little squat down on the haunches to pet her. And then you've done a full body leg press to stand up again. Just building these little things into your day can make all the difference. So I'm not saying everyone has to down tools and go to the gym more often.
That's actually what I really loved about the book. And it's reminded me of a section that I read, which was basically saying that this isn't meaning that we need to get to the gym. And in fact, spending less time at the gym and having more variety in the movement that we have in our day is potentially better, you know, so yeah, mixing it up.
Absolutely. Just having sort of in the back of your mind, getting a bit of movement in. It's sort of just a shift, slight shift in mindset, really, to try and, just try and things like, I don't know, that the main change that I've made in my working day, apart from downing tools and going for a walk and not feeling guilty about it anymore, is that I sort of move around. So sitting, yes, is not great, but there are ways of sitting that are less bad than others. So sitting on the floor anyway, that's sort of bracing the core and, you know, engaging your muscles, is much better than sitting slobbed on the sofa with a laptop on your knees, or, you know, just slumping in a chair. So you can mix it up, go sit somewhere else, sit on the floor for a bit, sit in a straddle, you know. Admittedly, again, if you're going to be working in an office environment, possibly not quite so accessible, but yeah, mixing things up, sitting on a ball rather than a chair, you know, there's lots that people can do to make sitting less harmful and to break it up.
And I think they're great tips because, you know, we are facing a working environment across the globe that is saying we're changing how we work. We've got these hybrid working ways. We're not 100% sure how we're really going to implement them yet, but we know we're hearing you. We know that these are things that we need to do. But there's a lot of noise around, well, working from home, it keeps me a bit more sedentary as well, because I'm no longer getting on the train. I'm no longer walking to the bus stop. I'm no longer doing my sandwich run. I'm in my house. So we're saying, let's be a bit creative on how we use our space. So if you're at home, use other spaces within the desk. I think that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there seems to be sort of two groups of people. I'm not saying this from any particular study, just from my observation of people I know. There seem to be people that have taken the lack of commute and gone, amazing, I can go for a swim this morning. I can go for a walk. I can, you know, do something else that I love doing. And there seems to be other people that have just not done anything with that time and actually sit more. So there seems to be sort of, you know, it's sort of a double-edged sword, really. I'm sort of quite lucky that I have a big, very boisterous dog that desperately needs to go out twice a day. So there's, you know, there's no, you know, it's not non-negotiable.
You're getting out of it. Yeah,
exactly. No, exactly. I'll just get annoyed all day if I don't. But yeah, you're right. We do need to sort of build it in. And one of the things that I do at home as well is when I've finished a bit of work or I'm feeling particularly stressed or whatever, or clearing up for the millionth time, it seems, a day in the kitchen, whack some music on and have a dance around, because dance has got all these amazing benefits for body and mind and is a real fundamental thing about what makes humans tick. And while I can almost feel people cringing as they listen to me saying that, but you don't have to do it with anybody else. But if you do move in synchrony with other people, that can make you feel a lot more connected to something bigger than yourself, which is something that I think we all need, especially when we're stuck at home a lot more. Yeah.
And it's that lack of connection that a lot of leadership teams are really struggling with. You know, I've been talking in my earlier podcasts about the Great Resignation. And one of the things that's coming up a lot is, well, we don't have that same emotional attachment to our organization as we might have, because we haven't actually been on the shop floor for 2 years. You know, so how do we build that connection, that trust with our teams when we're not with them? And actually I'm hearing that bringing some form of dance movement where you're even maybe virtually doing it together. Yes, there could be some cringe factor, but just laughing with the cringe brings that connection.
Yeah, or any synchronous movement. It doesn't necessarily even have to be dancing, but dance is great because it cracks everybody up. Or I don't know, it could be painful for many people, I imagine, especially doing it with your bosses. But the science behind the idea of sort of moving with other people is that when we move our bodies, we have this sense of proprioception, which tells us where our body is in space. And so we sort of know without looking where our limbs are. And so we have this sense going on all the time. When somebody starts moving in synchrony with us, the information coming in from our senses about what their body's doing starts to kind of get a little bit mashed up with the information from our own bodies, to the point where the dividing line between me and you starts to sort of become a little bit blurry. And that's actually one of the theories about why dance evolved in the first place, because humans have been dancing for, you know, thousands of years. We have cave paintings of humans dancing together. And the idea is that this factor brought people together in a way that we would work together and collaborate, which is something that's fundamental to how humans work. You know, we wouldn't have survived very long hunting and gathering if we didn't collaborate with each other, because humans are quite puny creatures, really, compared to the things we were hunting. And now, you know, even now, connection and collaboration is something that's really central to our mental well-being and also performance. So finding some way of moving together, whether that's sort of yoga, some form of comedy aerobics or tai chi or some silly dance, it doesn't really matter, but that act of moving together with other people helps us feel more bonded and more connected, which can only be a good thing.
Absolutely. And I love the fact that, as you say, you don't have to bring the awkwardness of dancing. Those examples that you've given us, a lot of us are practicing yoga, a lot of us are practicing tai chi. We know it's good for our body, but we might possibly not made the connection with connection, and how being in the space with other people is helping us really build some connection. And I'm going to go also to say trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it makes us, well, we've had experiments that have shown, I mean, there's some adorable experiments that have been starting with toddlers. And if you bounce a toddler on your knee in time to music and then put them down and sort of accidentally drop something, the little toddler is more likely to pick that up and give it back to you and be helpful than if you bounce them out of time to the music. And so experiments from little people all the way up to adults show that when we have moved in time together, we care more about each other and we cooperate better in sort of, you know, gambling games and things like that that they use in psychological studies. And so, yeah, moving together makes us care about each other, makes us work together better. So there's actually an interesting neuroscientist who's working on what he calls the groove enhancement machine, which is sort of a load of drum pads linked together with a computer, and people tap along together. And he's investigating whether people tapping together makes them work better in a way that he's thinking of. Maybe you could bring that into boardrooms eventually and into world leaders. So get people working together, tapping together. Does that mean that they come to consensus faster? So that's just, I mean, it sounds a bit crazy, but that's the kind of thing that scientists are thinking about in terms of collaboration and synchronized movement. But yeah, you don't need to go that far. You can just do some daft dancing. Even if you turn your camera off, as long as you can see the other people doing it and you're moving with them, you get the same effect.
And I think, you know, while some of these things may seem, you know, wow, that's way out there, that's, you know, that wouldn't have come into the boardroom, goodness me, no way, there's also something for me around the fact that we've gone through so much change because of the pandemic that we're possibly more open-minded and we're welcoming what can help us be better, you know, what can help us have less anxiety, less stress, feel more fulfilled in our work, feel more energized in our day. We want it, we're kind of craving it. So I like to think that, you know, these wonderful scientists get more airtime in the ideas that they can bring, because it's based on fact. You know, what you're telling me is that if we continue to live and work in the way that we have been, that point about cognitive decline, that's scary, and that's a problem, and it's definitely a problem for leaders who have a job to really boost a way of working and to be innovative and to be agile, otherwise their organizations fall behind. What would be your non-negotiables for a leader who wants to enhance their effectiveness? These are the things you really do need to start to listen to. These are the things you really do need to start putting into your practice, not just your knowledge but your body. What would be your three top tips?
I would say making time for forward movement of some description, as I was saying about, you know, feeling like you're making progress. That's really, really important. So getting some kind of movement involved in thinking about the future, that just makes everything a little bit easier. Another thing that's really, really important is strength. So strength has been known for years, you know, studies going back to the 80s, that if you improve people's physical strength, their self-esteem improves, they suffer less from anxiety, they're better able to resolve conflict. So this is a study I'm thinking about with a bunch of teenage girls, and they just improve their strength by sort of 40% over 12 weeks. And they started reporting that they felt more able to cope in situations that had nothing to do with physical strength, you know, physical strength. They didn't need to fight their way out physically, but having difficult conversations, making difficult decisions, they felt more able to do that. And so there's all kinds of philosophical sort of embodied cognition reasons why that might be the case. But what we do know from the studies is that regardless of doing cardio exercise, strength improves the way you feel and the way you can approach life. So that, I think that's absolutely a non-negotiable, and it's something that people do, you know, leave off. If you're going to, you know, people might go for a run but then not bother with the push-ups afterwards. So definitely some strength, and also I think stress-wise, so the sort of, there's been research for a really long time about how posture can feed into how we feel. And a lot of people will probably know about Amy Cuddy's research and the power posing. And that got a bit of a bad rap because no one could replicate the result. Well, part of the result was that people felt more powerful, and people have replicated that many, many times. The bit they couldn't repeat was the changes in hormones. So that explanation has gone by the wayside a little bit. But the fact remains that it being upright does help us feel more present, more open, and more powerful. And there's some really interesting new research that links via tracing, basically the neural connections, the wiring between part of the stress system, the adrenal glands, which sit on top of our kidneys and pump out adrenaline when we're stressed. And these researchers traced the neural connections from there all the way back to the brain. And where they turned up in the brain was in the movement areas, the motor cortex. And specifically within that, it was the area that was to do with moving the trunk, the core muscles. And so this is kind of a really interesting new avenue to look at, that maybe rather than trying to feel powerful and reduce stress by some kind of meditation or thinking your way calmer, maybe there's something you can do with your body. You can use your body as a tool, embrace, you know, engage the core, sit up straight, you know, just move in any way that affects your core, and that could help regulate stress and make everything feel a bit more manageable. So yeah, power posing was great, but it seems to be slightly moving on now. So yes, engaging the core is another really important one to do.
I love these three tips. And I have to say that from reading the book, I've always enjoyed moving, but I would definitely be one of those people that when I'm busy and I have a lot of work on, I focus on the work, I focus on my deadlines, and I am more sedentary, I am more in the zone of the work that I'm doing. And since reading the book, it's like as if it's given me, because it's based on science, this is telling you a little bit more about myself, because it's given me the insight, the research, the science, it says, actually, you're doing yourself a disservice. You're not as effective as you could be by working this way. I have certainly had this inner chit chat with myself going, remember what that book said, get out, or, you know, do something within the house. And it's been a fantastic reminder and also learning around how all of these connections in our bodies work. You know, so thank you for sharing all of this valuable science for us. And, you know, what's changed for you as a result of, you know, you would see so much in the work that you do, you come across so much science. You know, how much of that has changed how you live?
Well, I mean, quite similar to you, really. I mean, I've definitely, if I've got a load of work on, if I've got a load of deadlines to hit, then I will sort of head down. But I'm far more aware now of how dreadful that makes me feel and how it doesn't actually help. You know, it's a self-defeating behavior to just sort of sit down and give yourself a headache because your neck's all scrunched up. I mean, even so that some other interesting research is about stretching and how that seems to squeeze this tissue called the fascia, which covers our muscles and slides over, and it seems to have a role in the immune system, which is all feeds into inflammation and stress and all kinds of other things. And so even that, if at the very, very minimum, what I will do if I have one of those days where I cannot get out and go for a 5-mile walk, then I will make sure I do, you know, I do a little bit of sitting on the floor, a little bit of squatting, a little bit of, I might even lie on the floor and sort of read like that and to get a little stretch in the back. But I definitely try to do, at the very, very minimum, get some stretches in, because that can really make all the difference. But yeah, I think the way it's changed for me is that movement has become non-negotiable. I might not always get enough of it or as much as I would like, but it's definitely front and center now where it wasn't before.
And I think that's such a powerful close for us. Movement is non-negotiable. Yeah. And if we can all take that line into our day to day, we stand a far better chance at ensuring that we are maximizing our full potential, right? And that's ultimately, for me, why I loved everything that I was reading in your book. So again, thank you very much for bringing it to us. And thank you so much for giving us some of your time today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been great to chat to you, and it makes me very happy to know you sit in your office tapping away. It's just lovely to know that it actually affects people. So it makes me very happy to know that it's out there. So thank you for your help.
Good. It's making a difference. And we'll add some commentary later with regards to how to get hold of this book, which is called Move by Caroline Williams.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Newland Rock Leadership Effectiveness Podcast with me, your host, Kate Thomas. If you would like more information on how I can help you or your organization maximize your talent and leadership effectiveness strategies, then reach out to me through my website, newlandrock.com.